Let me let's go back to what happened at City Hall Tuesday. You're talking about
when you and Becky Johnson got up to the podium or whatever you want to call it.
Right. Actually, you're talking
about his attitude problem. Talking about, oh, step away from the podium, please. Step away from the podium.
Right. Actually, you're referring to a rather what I call a serious breach of democratic rights, which is the right of the public to speak about items on the City Council agenda. And it's actually provided for in the written agenda. They said that there shall be a public comment time provided. And we were talking about commission members, commission appointers, appointees, I should say. And the particular commission was, of course, the police department. We were talking about the Citizens Police Review Board. Unfortunately, we don't have a police commission. We have this little toothless group. But I guess any port in a storm, we were talking about the group, or trying to, and Mayor Fitzmaurice not only told us to step away from the podium, not only told us this was not the time for public comment.
And that's another one, Becky Johnson.
But he also said, hang on a second. He also said he wouldn't tell us when the time was for public comment. So in essence, he denied us the right to speak. But go ahead.
So when Becky Johnson got up there, she just wanted to simply find out when the public speaking would be.
Right.
And that's when he really got that attitude problem about himself. I mean, what I don't understand, why is people paying tax for a clown like him?
He's a Green Party candidate. You might want to talk to the Green Party. He's their boy, so to speak.
I got an announcement, too.
Uh-huh.
Street Spirit is a homeless paper that is published out of San Francisco, California by the American Friends Service Committee every month and sold for $1 or whatever people care to donate. Street Spirit, with concerns of justice news and homeless blues in the Bay Area and also right here in the Santa Cruz area. In the January 2001 issue, there are two Santa Cruz area homeless issues that you can read about. It is completely legal to sell this paper without a permit. And in fact, it is sold regularly by people on the streets who are houseless, and it is legal to sell the paper that you are not blocking the sidewalk, not abusing or harassing people while doing it. If any police or anyone has any concerns or questions, they should give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-4833, which is the HUF line. My name is Bud, and I'm a Street Spirit paper vendor, and I'm currently homeless, and I'm selling Street Spirit papers, and when I sell the papers, I do keep the money, and I use the money to buy for the following: coffee, food, hygiene items, and clothing items that people take for granted. Look for me outside in front of the Pete's Coffee Shop. That is between Cinema 9 and Noah's Bagels on Pacific Avenue, and if I'm not at that location, look for me outside in front of the Streetlight Record Music Store, which is on the corner of Pacific Avenue and Elm Street across from the Metro Center. Thank you very kindly for buying the Street Spirit paper, and I thank you very much for your kind support. P.S. Thank you for tuning in and listening to 96.3 Free Radio.
Hey, well, an unpaid commercial announcement, eh, Bud?
Yeah, I pre-recorded it.
Well, thank you very much. Anything else to report?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's about an earlier caller that called in, Steve.
Uh-huh.
He said he was selling the Street Spirit papers one time.
Yes.
And from my understanding, now this is what Downtown Host has told me last week, and maybe you can probably tell me more about it,
mm-hmm.
or how I can get the information. He told me that I cannot sit down while selling the papers. He said that's been happening for the past month during the time he was out of vacation. Vacation for 3 weeks.
That's not true. You can sit down. What you can't do is you can't panhandle from a seated position. You can't sit down within 10 feet of a store window, within 50 feet of an ATM, or within 4 feet of a telephone or drinking fountain.
So it basically has to do about the city ordinance pamphlet.
What's that?
So it has to follow to the same ordinance as the pamphlet, correct?
The pamphlet that is given out by the downtown hosts, or we call them the downtown pests.
Yeah, you got that right.
The downtown information center, which is right next to the old Del Mar Theater. People can get this little
downtown
flyer.
Downtown dunce.
The folks who I think are really primarily paid to police poor people and kind of provide cheap policing for poor people. I would say that it is illegal to sit unless you actually, if you bring your own chair, it's kind of strange. If you bring your own chair, you can sit in your own chair within 10 feet of a store window.
Yeah, I got my own chair.
If you don't have, if you, and then you're allowed to do that And I believe you can solicit for selling papers, because this is a newspaper. Now, again, I should warn you that what is now being argued by the city is that you can display them, but you can't sell them. I don't think that is in fact.
Well, it's not in the pamphlet, so I'm gonna do it anyway until I hear otherwise.
Okay, well, let me know if they harass you, and thank you for calling.
And one more thing.
Uh-huh.
Next week, next Sunday, on your next program, next on Sunday, I got a perfect. What was it, something about the song that
looking for a theme song, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'll have one for you next Thursday, next Sunday.
You better be good,
morning.
Bud.
We'll
we'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
And this is your favorite free radio broadcaster, Bathrop Spear, Robert Norse. This is the final hour of our 11 to 1:30 weekly Sunday show. We also come back on 6 to 8 on Thursday evenings. Bathrop Spears Broadside is what we call our show. With me in the studio is Scott Graham. Call-in number is 427-3772. At issue, more money for cops under the guise of helping bicyclists coming up at the city council meeting. And the number to call to raise these issues is 420-5017. There's also, since we're dealing with the police department, might be good to cover this issue, which actually is item number 23, I believe, on the council agenda, Scott.
Item 18 is on the consent agenda, so there won't be any discussion about this unless a council member or a member of the public pulls it. But basically what it is another cost overrun for the police department, which started out at about $7 million.
Which was quite a chunk of change to begin with.
And now it's up to $12.3 million.
And growing.
So here we go with more money for a building that was not only designed ridiculously inefficiently, but was built by the lowest bidder on a contract. That the city had already had problems with this particular contractor before, but hired them anyway because they had the lowest bid, and it turned out that the whole building turned out to be a big mess. They're still finding problems with that building, and I would suspect for the next 5 or 10 years various problems will crop up with this building. So this $111,000 they're asking for on Tuesday isn't the end. This isn't the last bit of money they're going to spend on this building.
I asked that very question the last time this issue came up. You know, how many more times are you going to be asked to rubber stamp this? And I think they even asked for a staff report. I don't recall that it ever came back, or that I at least was ever informed of it. And I do try to keep informed. That's one of the reasons I was asking Anna Brooks to copy certain documents before she had me expelled from her office and the city council, using, apparently Tim Fitzmaurice was using her as a way of getting rid of the city council coffee klatch protest. It's hard to get access to those documents now because some of them are in the city clerk's office, but many of them are in the city council offices, so we are having problems, those of us who are barred from Room 10, the city council offices, getting access to those documents. Should activists be barred from city council for sitting peacefully in the public foyer of an office with signs and the sleeping band during public hours? You be the judge. If you think not, give a call to city council at 420-5017, 24-hour line. Call them up and say, hey, hold off on items 18 and 22 of the afternoon agenda in terms of more, just this endless blank check, this bottomless purse for the police department. Let's really examine this. We're supposed to have a new council that's going to look into these things. The great liberals, progressives, Crone and Sugar have been joined by Ed Porter and Emily Riley, right? We're going to have some real examination, right? Wrong. I don't think so. What do you think, Scott?
No, I really doubt that these new council members are going to buck the trend that the police department has had over the years of constantly growing the police department. I think that this is going to be a continual thing, that they're going to use serendipitous methods such as this bicycle safety thing. They have a bunch of stats in here about bicycle accidents and how Santa Cruz is ranked very poorly statewide with other municipalities as far as the number of miles driven and the number of accidents that happen, stuff like this. But to me, the real problem is the car drivers. It's not the bicycle drivers. There's nothing in this report that says how many of these accidents that happened were the fault of the car driver or the fault of the bicycle rider. They're just going to go after the bicycle riders. It's, to me, it's insane. Another thing that's on this agenda this week is in the redevelopment session, item number 4.
That's usually starts at 5 o'clock, but now apparently can start as early as 4:30.
Item number 4 in the redevelopment budget, I mean on the redevelopment agenda, is relocation money for people that live at the Dolphin right now. And what's going on here is they're going to offer people a lump sum payment of $5,250 to just take this money and get the hell out of here. You're not going to come back to the new project. You're not going to get any more money out of us. All you're getting is this $5,250. Over the last 2 years, we were saying all along that this was the amount of money the city was going to give people in relocation. The city denied this over and over and over again. They kept on citing this $42,000 figure that they were going to possibly give people. And a lot of the people in the beach flats, their eyes lit up at the idea of getting $42,000. Well, now, all of a sudden, they're offering people $5,250, the exact figure we cited for the last 2 years, which they denied was the figure that they were going to use. So I just hope that if they do this buyout with these people, that they inform them up front, before they give them a check for $5,000, that they inform them up front that if they take this check, that they are thereby giving up all their rights to come back to the new project or to ask for more help if this $5,000 doesn't help them rent a place for 42 months.
I think it's even worse than that, Scott. This is a question of, for those of you who have kind of not followed the issue, the Dolphin Lee project, the Dolphin apartment buildings. We talked at great length about how the tenants of these two large apartment buildings in the beach flats have been targeted by Mercy Charities Housing and the City Council for demolition for their special project, which would provide subsidized low-income housing for a percentage of them, a minority of them, actually, and the rest of the people will be essentially told to fend for themselves. Currently, affordable housing for people would be destroyed for a project, a show project for Mercy Charities Housing, and low-income housing for some. We repeatedly asked City Council to consider other alternatives like building on vacant property, like fixing up other buildings, like buying, let's say, the Gutierrez property, which was is now the cause of so much contention where they've raised the rents, doubled them in a whole year. City Council wouldn't give us the time of day and wouldn't explain what it was doing. SCAN itself, back in May, asked that this entire project be put on hold until every tenant currently in the project, currently in the current Dolphin and Lee apartments, was guaranteed the right to return to the project or some other housing before their own housing was destroyed. Well, already they've destroyed the Rex Court housing across the street, which the Seaside Company...
Without any kind of engineering report whatsoever.
Right. There was no indication that it couldn't be rehabilitated except the simple word of the, what, the...
The head building inspector, Dick Stubendorf.
Right. He claimed it couldn't be, refurbished or rehabilitated. But if you look at various other projects around town or various other apartments where these questions come up, they have reports. And there's no report was made of this housing, which local... activist Jane Bear, for instance, claimed was historic housing, which had been used for good housing for many years or adequate housing for many years, probably definitely needed work. Seaside Company let it deteriorate and then sold it to the city. And some people think that there's a trade-off going on there where the Seaside Company got its parking lot, which had been zoned residential, suddenly zoned commercial again.
Right.
And there's no smoking gun that I know of right now, but... Although, actually, there is a smoking gun. It's unfortunately a concealed smoking gun. I can't reveal the source at this time. I believe that connection exists, and hopefully at some point the documents will come out.
The other thing of interest right now that's happening down the beach flats is that during the Beach South of Laurel area plan hearings and everything, the plan, there's 8 bungalow cottages on Riverside Street next to the main beach parking lot. And because they're historic, they had to do an analysis, they had to do engineering reports on those buildings, and the determination was that basically all 8 of them needed to come down, but 2 of them were rehabilitatable, and that once the plan went through, they could move those 2 buildings somewhere else in Beach Flats and destroy the other 6. Well, that never happened. That actually, the plans for that area were changed in the course of the whole thing. Right now, the Seaside Company, who owns those buildings, is rehabilitating all 8 of them. Even though they had an engineering report in the Beach South of Laurel plan saying that 6 of the buildings were beyond repair, they're repairing all 8 buildings right now because the housing market is so outrageous that it's worth their time and money to actually get these things onto the market.
Yet, in an outrageous housing market on December 18th, the city began and then finished at the end of January the demolition of the Rick's Court apartments. But the one thing I wanted to point out to you, Scott, before you go, and I guess we aren't going to have time to catch you on your analysis of we have an interview we're hoping to play with about affordable housing and the record of Councilmember Scott Kennedy by former Housing Advisory Committee member Paul Wagner. And I know that you look like you've got to be on your way.
Yeah, I have to be somewhere at 1 o'clock.
We're going to have to postpone that for another time. And for Paul, if you've been listening in, or Scott, if you've been listening in, for anybody else who's been hoping for that tape, I wasn't aware you had to leave at 1. I'd hope we could begin that tape now. But let's hope you can return at between 6 to 8 on Thursday, coming up 4 days hence. And pick up the threads of that. We had a very interesting. I had a very interesting interview yesterday with Paul, who went through the.
Well, we'll see what Scott Kennedy's made of when they do this relocation thing and the redevelopment session. We'll see if he says, "Oh no, let's not give him $5,000. Let's give him $42,000, like we've been promising all along." You know, you guys promised for 2 years to give these people $42,000. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean That's highly unlikely that right. Mr. Kennedy is going to take that stance.
Well, it seems to me the key thing is not $5,000 or $42,000, which is important, of course, in terms of being able to keep your housing in a difficult market. But if you read this closely, you find that they are talking about 50 adult males out of a total of 156 people. But the actual number of people who have been living in these apartments is between 300 and 400. What is happening to the missing 200 to 250 people? Have they evaporated? Have they disappeared? Have they gone to Mexico? What's happened to them, Scott?
Well, I believe that what happened to them was that the language of the deal that the city made with Mercy for taking over this was that only those legally residing there, not meaning that they had green cards, but that they were on some sort of contract or could prove their residency there. I think that over 100 people either didn't want to go through those sort of interviews and left on their own accord maybe because they were in the country illegally or who knows why, or they had, you know, outstanding warrants, any number of reasons. But I think a lot of people didn't bother to go through the interviews because they figured they wouldn't make pass muster. Or people that did go through the interviews were told, oh, sorry, you don't legally reside here. And that's what we're supposed to do, is find out who's legally here and who's not legally
here.
Yet
the term legal residence that we asked about at the crucial October 31st hearing, where they gave Mercy Charities $1.5 million in order essentially to privatize the whole project and remove it from public scrutiny,
right.
They assured us that phrase, legally occupied, from the mouth of Mike Rotkin, was it intended everybody living there, whether on the lease or not, as of, let's say, a month or two ago. Maybe it was even 90 days before. But it would include hundreds of people that somehow evaporated when the 156 figure we read in the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom newsletter in an article by Sandy Silver came out, or indeed in Elizabeth Vogel's statements to me by phone.
Well, I have to run, Robert.
Thank
Talk
you,
to you later.
Thanks for being with us. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I finally got a hold of you.
Oh, good. Eric, we can definitely We're going to have to skip back to an earlier subject. For those of you who've been listening, Eric, you are a man who was a witness 2 days ago on Friday afternoon to a rather disturbing incident on Pacific Avenue concerning a woman named Jenny
Curry.
Thank you. And off Sergeant Butchie Baker, or Sergeant Lauren Baker.
Yes, sir.
You wanna? We played part of a tape from I guess it's Diana.
Right.
Who saw some of that, although I think she came late. And we also have been talking about bicyclists and how the city council treats them, because now there's a huge grant coming up for the police to do more policing of bicyclists. You saw police behavior toward bicyclists on Friday. Tell us about it.
Well, actually, I was standing, I guess, down there by the Papagaya, and she was riding up towards the Cathcart corner on Pacific from the south, okay? And then when she hit that part where it becomes a one-way at Cathcart Street, the officer Baker called her over to tell her she was riding on the wrong way, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. But when she got over there, he was saying that he was going to write her a citation and all that. And I guess the conversation got heated. Like I said, I was at Papagayo at this time.
You were looking up. You were looking up Pacific Avenue toward Cathcart and Pacific, where I guess previously Cat and Canary used to have its headquarters.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And the conversation got heated, and all of a sudden I could hear her screaming at the top of her lungs. You know, what am I being charged for? What am I being charged for? And Officer Baker totally
Sergeant Baker.
Sergeant Baker. Mm-hmm. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Totally freaked out and manhandled this poor girl, and was like, had her by one arm, and she was like struggling, you know, and she was freaking out by this point, and I think I actually saw him hit her. I'm not sure, you know, if he hit her hard or if it was just he was reaching for her or whatever. I don't want to say Sergeant Baker's like a bad cop because he's Sergeant Baker, but yeah, I think I saw him. I'm hit her, you know.
How far away were you from them?
I guess I was like 15 feet, and I started walking closer.
What's your vision like? You have you wear
I
glasses?
Have perfect vision. I totally have great vision, and you know, it's not like I misinterpreted the situation.
And where was Baker standing with his back to you, or?
No, actually, I got a profile view of him, so mm-hmm. I got to see everything that was going on.
And
that's why I'm. So freaked out. I guess if I saw him from the back or something, I wouldn't know what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see a profile of it. I saw what looked like a swing and an impact. You know. And
did you hear any
freaking out worse? So Sergeant Baker actually called help. You know what I mean? At this point, he's slapping her around, and he calls two officers over to help him.
Now you say he was slapping around. Did you see him apparently hit her more than once?
Well, just in the struggle. You know what I mean? Like I said, I don't know if it was just part of the struggle, or if he actually meant to hit her. You know, cops aren't supposed to hit people, but
now,
that's what it looked like.
Did you see her? Did you see her at any attempt to escape? In the sense of, did you see her start to run away and he grabbed her?
No, not at all. Not at all. She wasn't trying to run away or anything. She just wanted to know what was going on.
Uh-huh.
Basically, she had been accosted riding her bike down the street, and all of a sudden she was faced with this situation, and I'm sure. You know, Sergeant Baker was kind of intense about it, and all of a sudden she didn't know, you know, what was going on. She felt like she was in a fascist state or whatever.
How could she think that?
Well,
for heaven's sake.
No doubt.
Right. Let me ask you this. We were told by Diana that she had heard that the reason for the arrest had to do with Sergeant Baker's learning she did not have ID. Did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, I heard something about that. But
you can't be arrested in this country for not having ID, at least not legally arrested.
The way I understand it, sir, is you can be detained if you don't have ID.
Well, you can what I'm saying is police can try to detain you at any time, then you can say, hey, I'm leaving a detention.
Exactly.
And then they can arrest you if they want. But in fact, the only time ID really comes into question is if they have reason to believe you're giving false information. Now that's a separate charge. It's a misdemeanor. It means you're lying to the police. You're giving them a false name in order to avoid justice. It's a very important that it's in order to avoid justice, because you can give any name in the world you want to give, provided you are not doing so to avoid justice. So, for instance, if you're doing it to avoid a warrant, that's a crime. If you're doing it because you've taken on a new name or that you've decided to use, that's your right. And you don't have to use your previous name, provided you are not doing it to deceive the police about a previous warrant or something like that.
Exactly.
So go ahead with what you're saying. So you originally were down at Papagayo's. You began to approach. At some point, you saw what seemed to you like Sergeant Baker striking the woman, Jen?
Yeah. I think a lot of people saw it. There was a good 15, 20 people around, and I was actually amazed at the audacity of these people that they would stage such a public thing right there.
By these people, you mean Sergeant Baker and your...
Read off the names here. I've got Sergeant Baker. I managed to copy down the numbers only, but badge number 115 and badge number 123.
Mm-hmm. What did these... Were these two male officers, or...?
Yes, sir. Male officer, both of them, and, you know, young. I'd say about 28. Younger than me, definitely. And,
what were they doing while Sergeant Baker was...
While he's manhandling her, they came over to actually help him manhandle her and get the cuffs on. And the way it was handled, the other two officers kind of reminded me of Keystone Cops, you know what I mean? They just were young and they didn't know what they were doing, and they entered this situation where this woman's jumping around. You know, she's freaking out by now. She's been hit, you know, she's being held down, you know, and stuff like that. And that's scary for a woman. That's bad enough for a guy, but that's even worse for a woman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just freaking out, and all of a sudden these two officers come over and help him get her over to the car, but it wasn't like just pick her up and take her and toss her in the back, you know what I mean? She was a small girl, you know. I'm not a very big guy. I could have done it by myself. I don't know why they required three people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just intense.
Did you hear her say at any point, what are the charges? What am I being arrested for?
That's what she was screaming.
And
she had said that maybe 20 or 30 times, and they said that the charge was resisting arrest.
Resisting arrest.
Which I think that's a charge you get after you're arrested.
Well, right? There has to be a valid underlying charge, or resisting arrest. It's a very kind of subtle distinction here, but... And I took this issue to the Citizens Police Review Board about a year and a half ago, and I talked to several attorneys about it. It is always illegal to resist an arrest, whether a legal arrest or an illegal arrest. You're not supposed to resist arrest, period. But if you resist an illegal arrest, there are no penalties for doing so. So that's a strange... In other words, I used to say, well, it's legal to resist an illegal arrest. That's sort of common sense. But it's not. It's illegal, but there is no criminal penalty for it. So if you do resist an illegal arrest, let's say a cop comes to your door in the middle of the night and breaks down your door without a warrant, it's an illegal arrest, and you shoot him, and they charge you with resisting arrest, among other things, you can say, hey, you know... that particular charge won't stand because it's not a legal arrest.
Right.
So, but on the other hand, they can still charge you with it and say, well, it doesn't have to be a legal arrest. We can still charge you. You can charge me all you want, but there's no penalty for it. That's what I understand from talking to attorneys Kate Wells and Ed Fry. So that's as far as my knowledge goes on that. Someone else can give me better information. I'd like that. So have you observed other instances of police misconduct around town, or are you what you call are you a cop hater? What's your status?
Well, I'm not necessarily a cop hater, because I understand they're here to serve and protect, and actually, you know, there have been a couple of times that I've needed the police here, and they woefully were not there. But for the most part, yeah, I try to stay away from them. I'm kind of afraid of them. I've seen their news station. I don't appreciate that all our tax money went to buy them this immaculate castle or stronghold or whatever.
Yeah, it's got an indoor shooting range, man.
I know.
Think of that.
Nice, isn't it? But marble floors and everything, and I think there's a waterfall. And then, you know, they just hired 2,000 more cops. I live down here in the flats. I've lived here for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly, I've had drug problems and blah, 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 but that was 3 years ago when I was younger and a little bit less wise. And I've gotten off of probation, you know, and I've beat them in court a couple of times. They've illegally arrested me a couple of times and tried to harass me. So I'm wary of the Santa Cruz police. but I'm not like a cop hater. I know that it's the individual, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're dirty as a whole, you know what I mean?
Well, let me ask you this. Have you? This is sort of on another subject, but have you been listening to the show? Or?
Actually, sir, this is the first time I've called. Sundays for me are generally
pretty busy.
Go to church and then go back to sleep. So
I got you. Well, I would go, but just don't go to sleep in church.
No.
But the question I have for you, and this, we've been following the fate of a bunch of Latino tenants of the Dolphin and Lee apartment complex. I don't know if you know about that. Those apartment buildings are about half a block from the boardwalk on Lee Brandt Street.
Yeah, I live right there.
Well, maybe I have been trying to figure out what has happened to a lot of the Dolphin tenants. I don't know if you know, but the city council gave $1.5 million to a group called Mercy Charities Housing to buy that complex. Now, I have heard from some people, from one man actually, that people have been moving out without any relocation money and essentially have been kind of dispersing because the people who run the apartment, the Mercy Charities Housing people, are saying, you know, we only want a certain number in here and, you know, you can't be here.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up.
Is that have you found that? Do you know any people who are leaving that complex? Or
yes, sir. I know people who are leaving this part of town. Period, because
uh-huh.
they're just being driven out of this part of town. This
Spanish-speaking
part of town's
people
always been infamous. You know what I mean? Yeah, Spanish people and white people alike. I mean, mm-hmm. the police here are harassing everybody. All of a sudden, there's always been a drug trade down here, but they never did anything about it until just like 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's when all this money started to come into question, and people were starting to get relocated, and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, literally now it's just become a police state down here. And you can't walk, like, a half a block without seeing an officer.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's your feeling about that?
There are drug dealers down here, but then there are a lot of innocent people down here, too. Huh. You know what I mean? And
do you feel the drug dealers are... Some people have told me, people who live there, like the Bears, Phil and Jane Bear, I don't know if you know them, but they're local residents, that they want the police to come in and clean up the drug dealers, or clean up isn't quite the right word, arrest, incarcerate, and send to prison drug dealers. I happen to think it's a futile effort, but, you know, I don't live in a situation where people are dealing hard drugs outside my house, and I don't know how I'd feel about that. How do you feel about that? What's your sense?
Well, my standpoint on that, sir, is, like I said, I did have my problem with it a long time ago. I used to be, like, in the music industry, and
mm-hmm.
I had too much money for my own good.
Mm-hmm.
But I've gotten out of it since, and I've been able to look at these people as people, you know what I mean? And there are very few violent people down here. Nobody's violent, you know what I mean?
So you don't think the sale of heroin and crack and cocaine? What are we talking about in terms of drug sales? Are we mainly heroin, mainly cocaine? Maybe
heroin and cocaine is what the police have decided to let get into this town.
I see.
There is no crack. There is no and it's cut so bad that you aren't supposed to die from it. I mean, you know, it's a wolf, it's a predator, but at the same time, you know, you can only economize the violence. People are going to do what they're going to do. And there's people down here that are sixth-generation drug dealers, okay? Like, there have been six generations living in the same house, dealing out of the same place, and if the police wanted to get them, they could have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're hiding, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just since all this money has been pumped into this side of town that they've started to arrest people and started to harass people. You know, it's gotten to the point where I'm afraid to go to the store, because I'm going to get pulled over by the police.
What about rents?
Like three or four times.
How are rents doing in the area? I mean,
it's horrible. I'm paying $300 for a hotel room right now a week, and that's actually better than what the apartments are going to be soon. I've tried to put in applications and stuff. You know, and they're going to charge like $1,200 a month to get people out of there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they're pushing people up here. It's really weird. It's really sad. And the boardwalk's never been Disneyland, but it's always been a tourist attraction, and it's always managed to make money and do well down here with this neighborhood right here. You know what I mean? What I think is they should just repaint the place and leave people alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there more you want to say about this incident that happened with Jenny Curry?
Well, just that... okay... My wife has been in trouble with the police here before because of registration and stuff like that, car stuff. And I remember that when the police were talking to her, she was really freaked out about this. The police had said something like, do you have anyone waiting for you at home? And blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. You know, made her feel like it was a sexual predatorial advance. You know what I mean?
Did she know that, do you know the names of the officers involved in this interrogation?
No, I don't.
Because
in the interrogation of Jen?
No, of her.
No, I don't.
The reason I ask you is, and I'm not trying to suggest that Sergeant Baker has returned to what some claim were his previous practices.
Exactly.
Sergeant Baker, as you know, as I mentioned earlier in the show, was the subject of at least 9 complaints by 9 separate women of improper searches involving improper sexual touching.
Yes,
shaking the bras, observing women in improper situations, which where it was actually discovered by attorney Margaret Marr in a case that I initially drew to the court's attention way back in 1991. I think it was Sarah Hillman was the original case. She began to find that other women had the same kinds of complaints against, and it was always Sergeant Baker. It was repeatedly Sergeant Baker, and there was a massive massive outcry. People came to city council in great numbers, demanded an investigation, and they set up a city council subcommittee, and then the next time when all the people didn't come back to the council, they dissolved it when manager Dick Wilson came back to town after a vacation and said, no, you don't want to do this. We trust our police force. And Baker was exonerated. He was promoted to sergeant. He was declared officer of the year, all within a year of this incident. And there was never any significant independent investigation of this. It was independent of the law enforcement agencies he worked for, perhaps other than the grand jury, although, again, I'm not sure if it was the grand jury or another agency that did it, but it wasn't any kind of significant advocacy group that would have given... They essentially said 9 women lied, all lied. Then Baker was telling the truth. And this... I've never found this story credible. I mean, I have friendly relations with Sergeant Baker. I talked to him yesterday, as a matter of fact. He was at the scene in the Bush protest. But I talked to him the day before because he refused to let me get a report for my own, the injunction that's against me at City Hall for demanding the sleeping ban end and trying to lobby peacefully at the City Council offices and the City Council coffee clatch thing that's going on there. But
My thing is, I'm not accusing Sergeant Baker, and I'm not saying that he went back to his practices, and in fact, I'm not saying that he did it.
Right.
But Sergeant Baker, being who he is, okay, he's a shorter man, but he's big. He definitely made me think twice about him, and he has an impressive aura. You know what I mean? He should be a sergeant. And being a sergeant, he was the one who attracted my attention at the scene I was at. You know what I mean? And he was the kind of outspoken leader type during that. So if that did happen, I would actually suggest to Sergeant Baker, I would check the people under me because they probably just noticed him. I'm sure Sergeant Baker, because he's always been under scrutiny. Everybody, you know, who's made anything here has always been under scrutiny. But, It's like I know that the police force here is very predatory. I have heard a lot about sexual harassment towards women.
What, recently or?
I've lived here for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the reason I moved here was they broke 2 of my ribs. Police did this, and they blacked my eye. I couldn't get a lawyer at the time.
What town was this?
Santa Cruz, right here at the boardwalk.
Uh-huh.
So,
who were the officers who did this?
I never found out. That's why able to press charges.
Were they Santa Cruz police officers, or were they like security guards or sheriffs?
The security guards started it, but the sheriffs definitely helped.
So
they were the ones who actually broke my ribs.
So it wasn't SCPD, it was deputies?
Yeah.
I gotcha. Okay. I like to make these distinctions because there are distinctions. So.
Definitely.
Uh-huh.
It's important that you know who you're dealing with, you know?
Right.
But I know that, like, the Santa Cruz PD has had a lot of complaints about sexual advancement towards women and trading, you know, like, favors for...
Do you know this because you've talked to the women involved? Or
yeah.
Why do you? And how many independent accounts would you estimate, being conservative, where you actually feel police officers have inappropriately engaged in sexual behavior with citizens?
Being conservative, I'd say I've heard
maybe 15 in the last 5 years. The people I trust and actually would give credence to out of that.
Are we talking about on-duty police behavior? Are we talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, if a woman is a sex worker, she may in fact have a you know business transaction with a police officer off duty, and that's none of my business or your business.
I don't hang out with hookers.
Right.
Okay. So
I got you. You're not talking about hookers here.
No,
okay.
I'm not talking about hookers.
Right.
Not
okay.
I'm talking about tricks or anything like that. I'm talking about actual, like walking down the street, and they thought they were down here for whatever. If you're white, they pull you over. And then all of a sudden it turns into something else, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually heard of, like, people trading, you know, don't take away my car, we can drive over, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that a lot in the 5 years that I've lived here.
Did
out
you,
of that, I'd say five for sure were true stories.
And you heard it directly from the women involved or from the friends of the women?
Directly from the women. I'm pretty lucky. I know a lot of the people in the Santa Cruz community.
I see.
And, you know, walking down the street for me is just like talking to everybody and getting to know it. And I'm one of those people that they just tell things to. You know what I mean? So I guess I'm kind of lucky in that respect, but at the same time, you know, it is kind of a curse. I do hear a lot of what goes on around here.
Well, I expect you to keep your eyes and ears open. I'm going to have to close this segment of the show unless there's more you want to say. We kind of got a I got 10 minutes left here.
That's fine, sir. But thank you for letting me call in and thank you for letting me vocalize. You know, they need to definitely get an internal affairs around here that works. We need our police.
Well, I don't think the internal affairs can do it. I think we need somebody externally really reviewing it. And I encourage you to give a call to 423-HUFF and anyone else who's got information about police misconduct, 423-4833, after you hang up here, Eric, and talk to the HUFF person there and arrange so you can go down and make a formal complaint if you're willing to do that. You may not be, but if you are, I'd say go for it.
I'm a little bit more politically stable.
Okay. Well, listen, and, thank you for calling then.
I do expect you to call me back, though, because I want to keep in touch.
Sounds okay. Good to me.
Have a good day.
All right. And here we are going into the last few minutes of Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. The protest yesterday had a rousing song from folk singer Mark Levy. I'm going to play that now. It's not the best recording, but I kind of like the lyrics. See if you do too.
He's the son of a bush. One more time. He's the son of a bush. On third base thinks he hit a triple on the corporate dole since he left his mama's nipple with a winning smile and a presidential push. He's the son of a bush. You come in, okay? When Georgie was a baby, his daddy said, son, it's your right to be richer than almost anyone. I'm giving you an oil field so you'll never fail. So Georgie humped his way through Harvard and Yale. And he was born on third base, thinks he had a triple on the corporate dole since he left his mama's nipple with a winning smile and a presidential push. He's a what? He's a Yes, Georgie was raised on Texas soil. Never got his hands dirty, never really had to toil. They swore him in as governor one sunny Texas day. Put his hand on the Bible, never took it away. And he was born on third base, thinks he hit a triple on the corporate dole since he left his mama's temple with a winning smile and a presidential push. He's the son of a Bush. He made quite a name like his dad, a kinder, gentler thing. From the poor he'll take, to the rich he'll give, a compassionate conservative. He was born on third base, thinks he hit a triple on the corporate dole since he left his mother's temple with a winning smile and a presidential push. He's the son of a Bush. Pulling on his strings. Well, he's gonna be the president, you know, of the United States of Mexico. He was born on third base, thinks he hit a triple on the corporate dole since he left his mama's nipple with a winning smile and a presidential push. He's a son of a
court with those since he left the top of Temple with a winning smile and a presidential push.
He's a son of a bitch.
Can't hear you.
He's a son of a bitch.
Let him hear you in D.C.
Marty Wormhout has arrived.
Yeah, just keep that thought
in mind.
Well, with apologies to Joni Mitchell, this is a real short
one.
Even though it was a long, drawn-out affair, as we know. Well, I came upon a chat that clocked. It was lying on the floor. And I asked. Well, I've gone down for the final count. I was punched too many times. You gotta read between my lines if you'll just hold me. We drink Starbucks, we count ballots, and we've got to get them in before the deadline. By the time he got to the White House, Bush was half a million short. He was glad he went to court to stop the counting. And he dreamed he saw those ballots hanging cloud-like in the sky, turning into butterflies for Pat Buchanan. We drank Starbucks, counted ballots, but we didn't get them in before the
that's just about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We've got about 4 minutes left, but we're going to try to sneak out a little early to give the little red hen a chance to warm up the kids with some of her stories. We do have a quick phone call here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
1407 Pacific Avenue, Palace Art and Office Supply.
One commercial per show, bud. And that's our favorite street spirit salesman who sometimes gets a little too enthusiastic on the air. But do check him out. He is a regular street spirit vendor. You can find him sometimes down near the Cinema 9, sometimes up near Streetlight Records. And Street Spirit is a paper worth reading, and I encourage you to do that. City Council meeting is coming up on Tuesday, and it's really important for folks. If you don't go to this meeting, and I get very bored with them, so I know a lot of people don't, and sometimes you get enjoined from going to them, like I do. Actually, that's been loosened. I can now go to City Council meetings, but I can't go and look at City Council documents. I mean, you don't want to carry democracy too far, right? So if you don't go to these meetings, well, you should register your opinion. If you think that there should be a cap on the amount of money the police department keeps getting for expanding its power in Santa Cruz, do give a call to 420-5017. That's the City Council 24-hour line. And tell them on items 18 and 22, postpone those items or hold real public hearings on them so we can talk about the best way to help bicyclists. And we can talk about what's really going on with these crazy cost overruns on the police department. There's absolutely no increase in shelter for homeless people. There's no move toward rent control. There's no action on the sleeping ban. Yet the police department gets everything it wants and more. I think that it means we really have to exercise the kind of control that City Council is not exercising. So encourage you folks out there to do that. What do we got here? I think we're going to
kind of pretty much leave it at that. And even as I speak, the CD machine is being commandeered by one of the evil Little Red Hen complex that is preparing to take over. Give a call off air if you'd like to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's HQ for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you've got instances of police misconduct, you have questions about what happened on the air, if you have any kind of commentary you want to have pressed on, there's a homeless working group meeting on Monday for those who are interested. That'll be happening at 3 o'clock at the Santa Cruz Diner. 3 o'clock at the Santa Cruz Diner for the homeless working group. That's the group that has been working on the sleeping ban and other issues. There's also a new group forming. I think it's tentatively calling itself Mainstreamers. Mainstreamers Unanimous, Mainstreamers Anonymous. It's got a name that they're going to be working on, and I will give you more information on that on Thursday when I get back to you. I now thank you for being with us, and welcome the next show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, The Little Red Hen.